To play tennis, you need to be able to hit the ball well, you need to move around the court quickly, and you need to be smart. But there's one other quality that the top players have that's almost indefinable, but which is certainly present. That's mental toughness. Hi there, I'm Patrick McEnroe, and welcome to the Tennis Worthy Podcast, brought to you by the International Tennis Hall of Fame. We've gathered three of the mentally toughest players of the past 40 years to talk about that side of the game. Jim Courier, Arantxa Sánchez Vicario, and Michael Chang.
What dawned on me was that if I were to go and I were to quit at that particular time, every other time that I would be faced with that same circumstance, if I were to quit once, the second time would be easier, the third time would be even easier, and every single time after that would become easier and easier.
You know, I was always very competitive person. Even if I was doing another sport, I wanted to win anyway. So I always felt that I wanted to, have confidence with myself. And that's something very important, that I know that when I'm going to get there, I'm going to give my best.
Some people are innately mentally tough. I think of someone like Rafa Nadal. Nadal was always just present every point and treated each point individually with disdain for the score. And the people who are not mentally tough, they play against the score as well as their opponent. So there's an ability to compartmentalize that some people naturally probably have.
We all use the term mental toughness when talking about tennis, but what is that? And can you learn it? Our Chris Bowers looks at this vital quality of the modern tennis player and concludes by reliving one of the greatest matches in recent tennis history, one where mental toughness played a central role.
When we watch the top players in the really tight situations, we tend to take for granted that they're just playing tennis. We overlook the fact that on the really critical points, when their arm may be feeling heavy or their legs aren't moving as smoothly as they normally do, they still don't make mistakes. They still manage to play the shots they need. This is what we put down to mental toughness, but it's still difficult to define. I sat down at Roland Garros with one of the toughest players mentally and an extremely eloquent analyst of the game, the former world number one Jim Courier, and I asked him directly, what is mental toughness?
Mental toughness for me is the ability to handle pressure, quite simply. That's what mental toughness is.
Okay, but it manifests itself in very different ways. Do people have it? Can you develop it?
Yes, to both questions. Some people are innately mentally tough. I think of someone like Rafa Nadal, who I don't know that the work that Uncle Tony did with him to develop him and to make him as tough as he was, the drills, the strategies, maybe some of the mental games that he might have played with him when he was a kid. But Nadal was always just present every point and treated each point individually with disdain for the score. And the people who are not mentally tough, they play against the score as well as their opponent. So there's an ability to compartmentalize that some people naturally probably have. But a lot of it can be learned, and there are lots of mental coaches out there that are really good at giving players strategies and ways to handle those moments, and their precious moments for tennis players between each point. Those 25 seconds are really valuable, Chris.
So is there a part of mental toughness that is actually almost switching off from certain things, like the score?
Well, if you ever talk to a tennis player who's just played a match and played incredibly well and gotten into the zone or the flow state or whatever it wants to be called, you will never hear them talking about how much they were thinking about what they were doing. You'll talk about how much they were just feeling what was happening, and it was very natural. So quieting the mind is very much a part of being mentally tough. In big pressure moments, you want clarity to react and do what's natural and what works best for your tennis game without thinking about the consequences. The consequences are that's the thing that causes people to play in ways that they shouldn't.
Psychological studies that have been done into how players choke and how they get over choking say an awful lot of it is down to just practice, so that you trust what you do anyway. But surely there must be a hurdle to overcome before you can get back to trusting what you do naturally on a practice course.
Well, I love the way you put that. I mean, if you have ownership of your game and you know what you do well and you know what you want to do in certain circumstances, then it's automated to a certain extent. And then you don't have to think about it. And you don't have to wonder, what type of shot should I play? What should my strategy be? You'll just know what it is. What I've seen over the years and felt at times in my career when I was getting nervous was there are two reactions to people who are not mentally tough under pressure. They either try to do too much because they want the point to be over quickly and they don't want to deal with the stress of it, or they want to do too little and they want their opponents to make the mistake and they're not willing to take any risk even if the opportunity presents itself to play a high percentage shot. So the players who live in the middle and just do what they normally do at the biggest moments tend to do the best in those moments.
Is there a way that you have to almost switch off your intelligence, that you have to make yourself a simpler person in order to get the right shots at the right time?
I think if you look at our great male and female mentally tough players, the Chris Everetts, the Navratilovas, the Federers, the Djokovic's, the Nadal's, I don't think we would consider any of them to be unintelligent. I think it's just a way of managing what is happening inside your mind and simplifying things. That is a sign of intelligence, to take something very complicated and make it simple.
When one looks at your career, you won 4 Grand Slams, 91, 92. You were world number one. You played another 8 years after that without ever winning another one.
You're shortchanging me. I won in 93, Chris, the Australian Open.
Yes, you did. And that was arguably your best performance.
It was, yeah. Yeah.
But is there a case to say that you lost some mental toughness?
I think it's more of a case to say that my opponents got tougher. Pete Sampras got a hold of Tim Gullickson, and all of a sudden he accelerated, and the game became tougher. And I did all my best works for as far as winning goes in that period of time you mentioned, but I was still mentally tough in big matches in Davis Cup, and I had some good runs, but I'm very pleased with my career, and I think my mental toughness was a big part of my success.
So if I reverse the question, did you have a longer career because of the mental toughness when other players started to take over in terms of strokes?
I don't know that I would have had a longer career necessarily, but I think that my success that happened in my career is absolutely a result of my ability to process information and manage pressure. I've been asked, you know, do you remember matches where you choked? And I was up 2 sets. Someone reminded me here the other day, because it was maybe 30 years ago that I lost to Sampras here in the quarterfinals, and I was up 2-0 in that match, but I didn't choke. Pete took it from me, and I can think of very few instances where I didn't play the right way, and I didn't always work out. You know, sometimes I won, sometimes I lost. But for me, mental toughness is controlling what you can do on your side of that. There's only so much that you can control with your opponents. So I look back at my career with pride in how I handled pressure situations.
So can you reverse it and say, can you give us an example of a match which you won on the basis of mental toughness, moderately high profile?
Yeah. At the tail end of my career, I was playing Murat Safin when he was a teen, and he was coming. Two of them. I played Gustavo Kuerten in Davis Cup in Brazil. I played Safin in Davis Cup in Georgia. And both of those matches were incredibly stressful, and I needed to win them. It was a fourth match against Kuerten, and we had an injured Mal Washington who wasn't going to play the fifth, so we were going to lose that match. It was a must win. I was able to win a tiebreaker. I think it was 12-10 in the fourth set when I was cramping. And mental toughness, I stayed with it and got the win for Team USA. And I played the fifth match against Safin in Stone Mountain, Georgia. And he was up 6-0, 4-1, 2 breaks, absolutely murdered me. And I completely changed my style of play, played a slice backhand pretty much the rest of the match, and used my savvy and guile and my ability to withstand pressure to win that match for Team USA. So I still had the mental piece of it for sure, and no matter where I was in my career.
Interesting that you should mention two team tennis events. Does that suggest that mental toughness is different when representing an entity bigger than yourself?
Well, I think there's more pressure when you're playing for an entity bigger than yourself, for sure.
And if we talk about youngsters, how can they learn mental toughness? Or do they have to have some bitter defeats before they really learn it from personal experience?
I think both. I think you do need to have some tough defeats that you learn from, and you learn how to manage crisis situations. And we primarily learn through our mistakes. I don't think textbooks can teach us everything. And I don't think sessions with mental coaches can prepare you for what you will feel in those types of moments. So you have to have a combination. But I think if you can have a mental coach who can give you templates to work with and devices to help you mentally deal with stress and kind of put things in the proper place, I think you can be ahead of the game.
Is there one player who stands out, other than yourself, of course, as the toughest person you've known mentally?
Yeah, I would say that without question, for me, Nadal is the most mentally tough player that I've seen, because no matter what the score was, it looked like he was playing the only point that would ever matter in his life. He never played the scoreline, and that's what tends to impact people. They play the situation instead of the ball and the opponent. And Rafa, to me, and maybe he'll write a book and he'll tell us that it was all a facade, but I doubt it. It looked like he had it in a very simple place for an intelligent man. He was able to really boil it down to its essence. The only thing that I can control is my next shot, and that's all he worried about.
The voice of Jim Courier, and how refreshing it is to hear a player say he was beaten not because he played badly or choked, but because his opponent lifted his game and was just better. That ability to accept that the opponent might be better, if only on that one day, is a big part of mental toughness. But another factor that Jim didn't mention there is that being in good physical shape towards the sharp end of matches is also important. It's a lot easier to simplify what's going through your mind and play the right shots if your body is working with you, not against you. That's a point emphasised by another four-time Grand Slam singles champion, Arantxa Sánchez Vicario, who was known for her mental toughness. Patrick McEnroe spoke with Arantxa in the margins of the 2025 Hall of Fame induction ceremony about confidence in general. She's convinced her fitness was a big part of her mental toughness.
I was a player that, you know, probably my physical condition was really good. I never had in 16, 17 years a professional on the tour. I only have two bad injuries in my career. I never had to pass surgery. And I was playing mostly in Grand Slams, you know, like 7 plus 7, you know, 40 matches in 2 weeks. Plus the mixed doubles, so if you're counting more. And then the weeks after, I play almost and getting, you know, like semifinals, finals or winning. So it's a lot of matches, but I think my schedule was a priority to do a good schedule. The recovery was very important because you need to recover for competing. And definitely, it was very important for me to, to have my condition in the perfect shape, but also learning to be able to stop when you have to, your body say stops, right? So, and my skills were like, you know, my tenacity, my probably, you know, consistency, my, I never give up. I was a fighter and I always, you know, was fighting from the beginning to the end. And I think my mental, you know, health was very, very strong. And these days in tennis is very important. And I was able to be concentrated where I have to, but also after when I stopped, you know, not being on the court, do things that relax me to be ability to be away for a while, not to think only about tennis. I have my family who also helps me to get me, you know, be away and do things that away with my brothers. And, that's something that I think that I try to go day by day, but that definitely always be, you know, perfect to be able to compete when I have to and then also resting.
You mentioned a few things, Arantxa, there in your last answer, which really showed you were kind of ahead of the game, because now many players and professional athletes talk about mental health, recovery, doing other things outside the game, competing. And it seemed like you had all those things. Where did they come from? I know you had your two brothers who were, you know, I played with and against, were great players. But what made you be able to see the importance of all those things at such a young age? You won your first major as a 17-year-old.
Yeah, correct. I think I was a person that I always, you know, I was always very competitive person. Even if I was doing another sport, I wanted to win anyway. So I always felt that I wanted to, have confidence with myself. And that's something very important, that I know that when I'm going to get there, I'm going to give my best. It doesn't matter. If they want to beat me, they have to beat me. I'm not going to give the match or I'm going to lose the match. So I think the confidence, as you say, is very important. I have a very strong character in this terms that when I say something and I wanted to achieve something, I go for it. And I think that I put some goals on my life that I think that helps me to get better, the motivations and also to get better every day and to be able to improve and learn things. And I was very curious, you know, when I was younger as well. So I absorbed everything. And coming from a young, you know, a fourth of the family who was in tennis in my family, I think I absorbed everything that I was hearing from my brothers or somebody to get it, you know, for me. And after, when I go, you know, my thing, the most important is that the way I was practicing is the way I was competing. Mm. And that's something that helped me a lot to be able to be always in the best of my game, and the tenacity and the discipline. And then also, I don't know, I have it since I was very little. I think I grew up with a little bit of that, but I was always a hard worker. And I think that pays off and it shows when I was playing.
Well, you were known as more of a defensive player, but how were you able to adapt to the different conditions so well? Because, you know, most people thought of you, she's, as you said, very tough, very well conditioned, very fast, more of a counter puncher. But obviously you had great skills at the net as well. So how were you able to kind of morph your game into being successful on every surface?
Well, it's funny, and people were thinking maybe I was more a defensive player, but to be able to be number one as I was and to take away Steffi Graf and then later, you know, Monica Seles.
So you had to deal with two of the all-time greats.
Exactly. I have to deal with two of the best, you know, on that generation and that moment. So it was tough, and I cannot only be defensive. I have to be attacking. So what I did is try to build and to learn how to be more also coming more to the net, more aggressive. And for that, the doubles skills, you know, helped me in the mixed doubles because there I can improve my serve, my volley, my returns and everything and then use it for my singles, you know, matches afterwards. So I took, you know, time for me to adapt that and to improve, to get it together with my, you know, my footwork and my skills of, you know, defensive and then attacking and then come more to the net. And like this, combined with my game that it was like, you know, from the baseline, it makes me one of the best players to beat. And then also, players don't like to play me because I never give up. I always give them one extra ball.
Right.
And also, I never play the same ball two times. I have variety. I can play, you know, spin. I can play slice. I can play flat. I can play drop shots. I can go to the net. I can, you know, stay defensive and then attacking. So I don't think many players, you know, can do that at the same time.
Right.
But probably I was not the tallest and the strongest, but I was the fastest and smartest. So I think that helped me and I can get to number one and... I worked hard to get there, and it was not easy in my generation, but I'm happy to be beating the best, you know, of my times.
We've kind of danced around, you know, the topic of confidence because it seems like obviously you had so much of that. Did it come from like an inner desire? Did it come from the fact that you had all the skills? You just said like when you beat Chris Evert, it gave you confidence, right? We all know as tennis players, you win, you get more confidence. But where would you say it came from for you?
I think it comes probably from inside of me. Like, you know, like I wanted to be, you know, good, but I also wanted to be, you know, the best I could, you know? So I and the confidence that you say you build it, it's because you believe in yourself. And I always believe in myself that I know that I can do big things and I have to work harder than everybody else, probably because, as I say, I was not the tallest, but I knew that if I course continue, you know, doing, you know, my best every day, the things will kind of come. And probably, as you say, you know, the discipline, and I was like, you know, the desire to willing to do well, and probably, you know, as I like to work hard, and it's paying off. The work is paying off. So all that, and probably my mentality that I don't want to lose and never give up, that helps a lot to continue to get improved. And when you are young, you have nothing to lose. Later, you're dealing to how to learn with the pressure, right? And then, as I say, after I learn from 17 to deal the next year, because in Spain, everybody wants me to win everything. I say, hold on a second, you know, you have to let me have the adaptation to be from, you know, from being a normal child to be in the top of the game to win. So I have to learn. But for that reason, I'm also, as I say, I was learning, I was improving. Then you have people who help you as well, because before you, as you remember, it was not well known to know that you have a psychologist or somebody who was helping you. Now you can talk about it,
right?
So, but there's people who can help you to improve that, and it's nothing wrong. You just have to get, you know, the best things for you to become better. And that's what I did, and I worked as well with that, and I continue, and I think I have a very strong mentality, and that helped me to be the maturity on the core of the core, and to help me when I was playing in the matches as well.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that now with, I've heard this over the years from great players. Yvonne Lendl comes to mind, that when he, you know, concentrated on his physical fitness, that gave him a little more confidence, right? But now you're seeing it even with some of the top players now on the mental side. Iga Swiatek would be a good example. You know, she's always got her mental coach and working on different things, and, you know, plays the best Wimbledon she's ever played, wins Wimbledon. It sounds like that confidence for you was something that you always had as a young kid, and then you just kind of continued to develop it during your career. Is that correct?
Yes, I think I had it, and I developed it. And also because probably, as I say, you know, I come from a tennis family, also helped me to talk to my family and my brothers. So that also gave me the confidence, as I say, to continue doing, because I was going in the right direction as well. So I always have the good people on my side, and that's very important. That helps a lot when you have people that they know, you know, what to help you to improve, you know, in different ways and to take it. And then you are the one who has to do it, but go for it and try to always give your best. And then, as you say, you know, sometimes we have up and downs. All the tennis players, we have up and downs, but we have to get away faster, you know, to continue to have the success as we have. And obviously it's normal that we, you know, that sometimes you have doubts, and you, but you always try, because you have the confidence and you know you very well, and the people around you your team knows you very well, helps you to be able to go away faster from those situations. So that's something very important. Before, we didn't have many people. We have maybe only the coach.
Right.
Or maybe if you're lucky, you have the family, someone family. But now they have everything. You know, they have doctors and, you know, nutritionists. They have a psychologist.
Full teams.
Full
right.
teams, you know, like many people. So everybody has her own, doing her own job and the professionals who help. But at the same time, you are the one who has to find the way to do it, because with many voices, even if that, you have to find the solution yourself, because it's also individual sport, and to find the way and have the confidence to do it every time to get better and to improve and to continue the success.
Arantxa Sánchez Vicario talking about how fitness, variety, the people around her, the ability to switch off, the ability to turn defensive play into attacking play, and her refusal to give up all helped her build up her mental toughness, which gave her the confidence to win matches, including those against players who were fancied to beat her. All right, so what of mental toughness in action? We often need an example of something to really understand what it's about. So let's take one of the most iconic matches of all time, the fourth round clash at Roland Garros in 1989 between the then world number one, Ivan Lendl, and a promising 17-year-old American, Michael Chang. Chang was noted as a rising star of American tennis, but he'd only made his debut in Paris the previous year.
You know, I was excited to be back again and, you know, just relishing the opportunity. I knew that I had worked really, really hard, but never in my wildest dreams or imagination could I imagine what would take place over the next 2 weeks.
The 15-seeded Chang had three comfortable wins in his first three rounds, dropping just one set. But then he came up against the top seed, world number one, and champion in three of the previous 5 years, Ivan Lendl. That would surely be the end of the road, yes? Well, Chang's father, Joe, certainly thought so.
My dad had left the day before because he felt like, well, you know, Michael's probably not going to get through this match and I need to get back to work. And it was really strange because my mom was talking to my dad prior to the French Open starting. And my mom doesn't normally make these kinds of like predictions, but she said to my dad, she goes, I think Michael's going to do really well this year, just out of nowhere. And my dad was kind of like, okay, you know, and why I don't really know. But for some reason, she had a gut feeling, you know, that something special was going to happen.
The backdrop to the match was also of significance. It was scheduled for the second Monday of the 14-day tournament, but the day before, Chinese government troops had stormed Tiananmen Square in Beijing, violently ending several days of student pro-democracy protests. Although born in New Jersey, Chang was of Chinese descent, his parents having immigrated to America from Taiwan, and he was thought of very much as a Chinese-American. He says this added extra motivation in his match against Lendl.
You know, there were a lot of emotional things going on at the time. You know, the situation in Tiananmen, the crackdown actually happened the middle of Sunday. So it was a very downtime for Chinese people, obviously there in Beijing, but also around the world. And, you know, if I wasn't out playing my match or practicing, you know, I was glued to the television set, you know, watching the events unfold up there. And, you know, as I was watching a lot of those events, it was, you know, hard to compare, I think, in certain aspects, my tough matches to what they were going through. It was actually easy to gain courage from knowing that, you know, some students were giving their lives for something that that they believed so, you know, so deeply about. And, you know, certainly the last four matches that I played there were played on inspiration and, you know, were just incredible the way that things happened.
Chang played the first two sets very well, but he was up against the world number one and defending champion, so it was no surprise when Lendl took them both 6-4. But then Chang got a break and won the first set Lendl had dropped all tournament. When Chang broke midway through the fourth, Lendl lost his cool and was given two warnings, the second resulting in a point penalty. But as Chang held on to take the match into a fifth set after more than 3.5 hours of play, he was facing issues of his own.
The problems really started at the end of the fourth set is really when I started to cramp. And then obviously the fifth set is something that I can't really explain. You know, cramps were getting to the point where I was not able to run the way that I normally am able to run. Movement obviously is one of the greatest assets that I have. And at 2-1 in the fifth, I was very, very close to just defaulting the match. Actually, I'd started walking toward the chair umpire at one point, I got to the service line and I had an unbelievable conviction of heart. It was almost as if, you know, I felt like the Lord was telling me, like, hey, what are you doing? And I was thinking to myself, well, I'm just going to call it a day here because, I mean, let's face it, I'm cramping. I'm hurting out here. I'm playing the number one player in the world. He's a three-time French Open champion. I'm not going to win this match anyway. So what's the difference whether I quit now or whether I go, I finish this match and I still lose? There's no difference to me. And what dawned on me was that if I were to go and I were to quit at that particular time, every other time that I would be faced with that same circumstance, if I were to quit once, the second time would be easier, the third time would be even easier, and every single time after that would become easier and easier. And I didn't want to be known to be a quitter as far as being out there on tour, because generally speaking, if people know that you're going to falter and you're going to just, you know, keel over and go away, people try harder. But in the same respect, the opposite actually holds true. So if they know you're a fighter, if they know you're never going to give up, when push comes to shove, sometimes players just go away because they don't want to stand there and keep fighting you. So I said, okay. I said, all right, Lord, I'm just going to go out there. I'm going to play just take it point by point. And my goal now is just to finish the match as best as I possibly can.
And that is a big part of mental toughness. You may be feeling dreadful, but you don't know how your opponent is feeling. So if you're committed to staying there until the last point, you always have a chance. Note also Chang's passing references to his very deep religious faith, which also bolstered his toughness on a court. But don't underestimate his tactical ability either. And as the match went into a fifth set, Chang changed his strategy, not trying to end the points quickly, but moonballing Lendl, which added to Lendl's disintegrating confidence. And with the 17-year-old serving at 4-3, 15-30, he played the shot this match has become synonymous with. An underarm serve that took Lendl by surprise, allowed Chang to hold for 5-3, and eroded Lendl's confidence still further.
Whenever I would have a shot to go for, I would just go for a winner. I'd miss some of them, but incredibly, I would be making a lot more than what I was missing. Shots were going in, and I would be moonballing the ball back to Yvonne, and he would start moonballing it back. He didn't try to drop shot me. He didn't try to angle me. And so every opportunity that I had, I'd go for shots and they just started going in. So I can't really explain what really happened. And before I know it, you know, he double faults and on match point and, you know, I'm on my back in emotion of tears. And, you know, it was just an incredible match to be a part of.
That victory would have been enough to put Chang on the map, even if he'd lost in the next round. But he beat Haiti's Ronald Agenor in four sets, and then had another four sets win over Andrei Chesnokov to reach the final. There, he was the clear underdog against Stefan Edberg. And when Edberg won the second and third sets after a barnstorming 6-1 opener by Chang, the tide was going out on the 17-year-old's fairy tale run. But in the fourth set, he again showed phenomenal mental toughness.
The fourth set, to be honest with you, I should have lost. I was facing something like maybe like 11 break points, I think, just in that set alone. And I saved every single one of them. I remember one particular one where Stefan came in on my backhand side. There's no way I could hit a cross court. I was so late on it that I just had to kind of shove it down the line. And I remember hitting that ball and watching it. And I'm like, it's going to go wide. It's going to go wide. And for some strange, odd reason, all of a sudden, it's just the last second, it just turned. And Stefan was like, well, he could have hit it, and he thought it was going to go wide like I did, and he just let it go. And the ball bounced, and there was no call, and Stefan looked at it and was like, can you please come check this mark? And the ball just catches the very outside of the line. And I was thinking to myself, there's just no way that ball should have come in. And I had one break point. I had one break point the entire fourth set on his serve, and I converted the one break point. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're in the fifth set and I got down early break. I lost my first service game. And then after like maybe three games, I could tell Stefan was just running out of gas. He was getting tired. And then I started to pull away from there.
It was an amazing weekend. Two 17-year-olds had won the French Open in successive days. The youngest ever players to win a Grand Slam singles title in the Open era. And while a 16-year-old Monica Seles bettered Sanchez Vicario's record a year later, Chang is still the youngest ever men's major singles titlist. Chang went on to reach three more major finals and become world number two, but never won another slam. and yet his mental toughness in 1989 has become legendary. So who does Chang himself consider the toughest player he's seen?
Mental toughness? I would have to go with... I'd have to go with Roger Federer.
Michael Chang ending that exploration by Chris Bowers into the essence of mental toughness. I remember that weekend when Arantxa and Chang made history in Paris very well, as the epic Graf-Sanchez final delayed the men's doubles final, in which Jim Grab and I were going for our first major title. And yes, we got it done. The full version of my interview with Arantxa Sanchez-Vicario will be available later in November 2025. In our next attributes-based podcast, we'll be looking at sportsmanship, and there are other podcasts in the Tennis Worthy series that look at attributes and values, so please check them out at tennisfame.com/podcast. The Tennis Worthy podcast is brought to you by the International Tennis Hall of Fame. I'm Patrick McEnroe, the president of the Hall of Fame. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.